Bonamici, Boone, Boquist, Bruin, Buckley, Burley, Butler, Cameron, Cannon, Clem, Cowan, Dallum, Dingfelder, Chris Edwards, David Edwards, Esquivel, Flores, Galizio, Gerard, Gilzer, Gilliam, Gilman, Gerard, Greenlick, Hannah, Holvey, Hunt, Jensen, Comp, Kotek, Krieger, Crummel, Lim, McPherson, Maurer, Minnis, Morgan, Nathanson, Nelson, Nolan, Olson, Reed, Richardson, Riley, Roblin, Rosenbaum, Schaffler, Scott, Shields, Greg Smith, Patty Smith, Thatcher, Tomei, Wisnet, Witt, Mr. Speaker, Excused, Boquist, Butler, Esquivel, Minnis, Excused for Business of the House, Nolan.
The Black Salute will be led by Representative Larry Galizio.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
The opening ceremony will be presented by Representative Andy Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, let's just pray. Father, we thank you so much for a new day, and we thank you, too, for the sunshine that we're experiencing outside of this building today. And as we move forward into this day, we would ask that you would grant us your wisdom that we depend on greatly. We would also ask from you energy, because we do need that, as sometimes some of us get tired through the day, especially the older ones. But what we really ask from you is your guidance for the leadership in this building, the guidance for the leadership in our country, and that you would also provide protection to those that are protecting us throughout this world. Thank you. In Jesus' name, amen.
Courtesies, Representative Patty Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I'd like to introduce to you the Hood River Blossom Court. They're all seniors at Hood River High School, and they're over here on my left. And Fatima Valier is at Linfield College. You want to wave so they know who she is. She's going to be in elementary education. Morgan Bell is going to go to Oregon State, sports marketing and advertising. Allison Moore, University of San Francisco, or Western Washington University in International Business. These are great girls, and a great event is happening in the third weekend in Hood River, the Blossoms. We hope they're blooming this year. And they'll be around to give you these state fruits, state pears. And I want to extend courtesies and welcome them to the Capitol today and hope you enjoy your visit. Thank you.
It's wonderful to have you. Welcome. Representing Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It is my great pleasure to introduce one of our honorary pages today, Marshall Balderston from Eugene. Marshall is 13. He's in the eighth grade. He's homeschooled, but he's on the South Eugene High School athletic teams. He plays basketball, football, and baseball. He told me he's a lefty and a pitcher. He is fully expecting that you will see him on a baseball card one of these days as a professional baseball player. And he also intends to attend medical school and follow in his father's footsteps, who works as a high-risk obstetrician. Thank you, Marshall, for being here today. We appreciate it. Also, I would like to introduce David Case. who is a counselor at in Cresswell in my district. His wife, Ronnie Dersham, and their son, Rollin, are here. Rollin, who's nine, testified this morning before the Senate Education and General Government Committee on Senate Bill 312 and Senate Bill 622 on the Talented and Gifted Program. Rollin's grandparents, Ron and Connie Dersham, also of Cresswell, are also here today. Please greet them as you see them. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative Cameron.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I ask you to welcome a group of constituents from Marion County Early Childhood Consortium up in the upper balcony. We'd like to welcome you here today. As many of us know, this is National Brain Awareness Week, March 12th through the 18th, 2007, which was also proclaimed by the Marion County Board of Commissioners. On your desk, you'll find a flyer that has the proclamation and a little bit of information about early childhood development in the first 3 years of a child's brain and how important it is to their future life. Will you please join me in welcoming members of the Marion County Early Childhood Consortium: Janet Carlson, Commissioner, Tracy Strohmeyer, DHS, Linda Craven from Chemeketa Community College, Olga Cobb from Even Start, and Tammy Gosher from the Children and Families Commission. Welcome.
It's good to have you, and welcome as well specifically to our former state representative. Good to have you. Representative Dallum.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would like to draw your attention to the gallery right over my shoulder. I have three visitors from Madras: Ron Pardis, Director of College Relations, Mary Jean Kohar, Instructional Dean, and they have brought with them a person that I'm very proud to say belongs in our community. On your desk, you'll see a handout. It talks about Jay Henry. He's the Chief Executive Officer of the Mountain View Hospital in Madras. Jay's only been there 18 months, but excellent things are happening to the hospital in Madras. And if you read that broadside, I'm sure you'll agree with me that he truly is a stellar citizen of House District 59 in general and Madras in specific. Please welcome from Madras.
Welcome. Representative Beyer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Today it's my privilege to introduce one of our honorary pages up front. His name is Zach Eister. He comes from Springfield. His parents are Mike and Cheryl Eister. He's 13 in the eighth grade at Kelly Middle School. His school activities are basketball and baseball, and would like to either be an orthodontist in sports marketing or a baseball player. And I'd like you to welcome him when you see him in the chamber.
Thank you, Representative Lim.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And I just want to make sure we have 31 students, fourth graders from the Hogan Cedar Elementary School. Are you there? All right, I want to stand up. All right. Mr. Speaker and members, we had last week another group of 30-some students from the same school. Today, we have again 31 students from the famous Hogan Cedar Elementary School fourth graders, and the leader of this group is Julie Eisler. Did I pronounce your name correctly? Eisley. All right. Close. Okay. Mr. President, members, I would like to welcome them to this chamber. This is a great student. They're the future leader, and we are glad to have them here today. Thank you, and God bless.
It's great to have your class here today. Are there further courtesies? Messages from the governor. Messages from the Senate.
Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the President from the Senate to pass Senate Bill 199, 202, 205, 207, 214, 216, 233, 244, 255, 271, 310, 311, 325, and adopted SCR 10, SJM 7, and SGR 9.
First reading, memorials and resolutions.
SCR 10, mourning the flooding of Celilo Falls in 1957 and its loss to the tribal people of Oregon. SJM 7, urging Congress to continue fund housing restoration at Celilo Village until completion. SGR 9, designating month of March in each year as colorectal cancer awareness month.
Measures read first time are passed to the Speaker's desk for referral. Standing committee reports. The committee report file has been distributed. Special committee reports. Propositions and motions. First reading of House bills.
House Bill 3352 relating to alien criminals. House Bill 3368 relating to increasing access to health care, appropriate money, and prescribing an effective date. House Bill 3369 relating to local public safety. House Bill 3370 relating to alcoholic beverages and declaring an emergency. House Bill 3413 relating to financial administration of the Department of Transportation, appropriate money, and declaring an emergency. House Bill 3417 relating to Main Street property incremental tax credit and prescribing an effective date. House Bill 3418 relating to Oregon Main Street program. House Bill 3419 relating to civil liability for the unlawful use of firearms. House Bill 3420 relating to juvenile departments and declaring an emergency. House Bill 3421 relating to malt beverages. Purchase tax appropriate money providing for revenue raising that requires approval by a three-fifths majority. House Bill 3422 relating to state financial administration appropriate money declaring an emergency. House Bill 3423 relating to reductions in capital gains taxes. House Bill 3424 relating to higher education declaring an emergency. House Bill 3425 relating to taxation on capital gains. House Bill 3426 relating to illegal aliens. House Bill 3427 relating to school districts. House Bill 3428 relating to criminal aliens. House Bill 3429 relating to repeat property offenders. House Bill 3430 relating to inheritance taxes and prescribing an effective date. House Bill 3431 relating to Department of Public Safety Standards and Training. House Bill 3432 relating to Board on Public Safety Standards and Training. House Bill 3433 relating to Oregon Prescription Drug Program. House Bill 3434 relating to sale of Elliott State Forest and declaring an emergency. House Bill 3435 relating to boats. House Bill 3436 relating to population progressing for land use planning. House Bill 3437 relating to exotic animals and declaring an emergency. House Bill 3438 relating to education funding districts and prescribing an effective date. House Bill 3439 relating to personal flotation devices. House Bill 3440 relating to nearshore research and declaring an emergency. House Bill 3441 relating to criminal penalties. House Bill 3443 relating to ceremonies for deceased persons prescribing an effective date. House Bill 3461 relating to land reclamation. House Bill 3464 relating to condemnation authority. House Bill 3477 relating to dead animals. House Bill 3478 relating to dairy processors and prescribing an effective date. House Bill 3479 relating to inheritance tax exclusions. House Bill 3490 relating to proof of loss. House Bill 3491 relating to sites for radio controlled model vehicle use in exclusive farm use zones. House Bill 3492 relating to complaints against licenses of Board of Medical Examiners. House Bill 3493 relating to tax credits for contributions. House Bill 3494 relating to State Department of Agriculture. House Bill 3495 relating to inheritance tax exclusions. House Bill 3496 relating to periodic review of comprehensive land use plans. House Bill 3507 relating to investment tax credits. House Bill 3508 relating to tax expenditures and providing for revenue raising that requires approval by a three-fifths majority. House Bill 3509 relating to Economic and Community Development Department. House Bill 3510 relating to statutes of limitations. House Bill 3511 relating to ultraviolet video games. House Bill 3512 relating to task force on agricultural workforce needs and declaring an emergency. House Bill 3513 relating to prohibition on use of illegal labor on project financed by state grant or loan. House Bill 3514 relating to eliminating tax deductions for wage of undocumented workers and providing for revenue raising that requires approval by a three-fifths majority. House Bill 3515 relating to crime. House Bill 3516 relating to verification of lawful presence in the United States for applicants for assistance. House Bill 3517 relating to child abuse. House Bill 3518 relating to English language instruction, appropriate money, and declared emergency. House Bill 3519 relating to family group homes and appropriate money. House Bill 3520 relating to emergency communications. House Bill 3522 relating to trafficking illegal aliens and declared emergency. House Bill 3523 relating to an inheritance tax exclusion, prescribing an effective date. House Bill 3524 relating to mental health database. House Bill 3525 relating to Columbia River water, appropriate money. House Bill 3526 relating to sexual orientation discrimination. House Bill 3527 relating to racing activity vehicles. House Bill 3528 relating to podiatric physicians. House Bill 3529 relating to intergovernmental forest land transfer.
Bills read first time or passed the Speaker's desk for referral. Second reading of House bills.
House Bill 5045 relating to financial administration of the State Board of Tax Predictors and declaring an emergency. House Bill 5049 relating to financial administration of State Treasurer and declaring an emergency. House Bill 2095 relating to housing authorities. House Bill 2247 relating to services provided by nurse practitioners of work compensation claims. House Bill 2446 relating to video game terminals and establishments with Brewery Public House licenses. House Bill 2630 relating to Oregon Veterans Home Account. House Bill 2700 relating to contraception.
Bills read second time or passed the third reading. Representative Bruin, for what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I request permission to temporarily return to the order of courtesies.
Permission to return to courtesies. Is there objection? Seeing none, please proceed.
Mr. Speaker, I request unanimous consent to suspend the rules to extend full privileges of the House and the floor to former Senator and former State Representative, as well as my immediate predecessor, the Honorable Randy Miller.
Well, just a moment. Hold on a moment. Folks, let's give an official welcome here. Representative Bruin requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and former Representative and Senator Randy Miller be granted the privileges of the House and floor. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Are there further courtesies? Consent calendar. Clerk will read the bill and short summary.
House Bill 2225 relating to employees of Department of Public Safety Standards and Training provides that employees of Department of Public Safety Standards and Training who hold a certification as police certified reserve corrections or parole and probation officers, fire service professionals, telecommunications, or emergency medical dispatchers.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2225. Those who are of the opinion the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Beyer, how do you vote? Representative Beyer votes aye. Representative Roblin, how do you vote? Roblin votes aye. Representative David Edwards, how do you vote? Edwards votes aye. Representative Bonamici, how do you vote? She votes aye. And Representative Nolan, how do you vote? Representative Nolan is excused for business. House Bill 2225, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill in summary.
House Bill 2226 relating to police standards and training account provides that monies received by Department of Public Safety Standards and Training under private security service provider licensing and certification provisions and under investigator licensing provisions may be used for either of those regulatory programs.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2226. Those who are of the opinion the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Beyer votes aye. Representative Lim, how do you vote? Representative Lim? Representative Lim, how do you vote? Lim votes aye. Representative Riley votes aye. Representative Greg Smith? Representative Greg Smith votes aye. House Bill 2226, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Representative Crummell, for what purpose do you rise?
Request to return to courtesies, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Crummell, request unanimous consent for return to courtesies. Is there objection? Seeing none, please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And members, I would like to extend courtesies to another Miller that is in the building this morning. Courtney Miller is the daughter of former Representative/Senator Randy Miller, who a few minutes ago we recognized, and she's over here on the side aisle. Courtney graduated from Westland High School in 2003 at the tender age of 17. She is currently a senior at Arizona State University, and I just wanted to recognize her and thank her for being here today. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Courtney, it's a pleasure to have you here. Are there further courtesies? Chair requests unanimous consent to temporarily advance the order of business of third reading of Senate bills. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and that Senate Bill 426 be read third time immediately. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Clerk will read the bill.
Senate Bill 426 relating to benefit plans for education districts, employees, appropriate money, and declaring an emergency.
Colleagues, before I turn to the carrier, I'm going to take the prerogative of the chair to remind folks about Rule 610, conduct in debate. We have before us a bill that's been widely discussed, a very emotional bill, and I want colleagues to all have in mind the following. In speaking, the member must confine discussion to the question under debate, avoid personalities, and not impugn the motives of another member's vote or argument. Representative Roblin.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and colleagues. Skyrocketing health costs affect all Oregon families and businesses. The rapidly rising price of health care also drains precious resources from Oregon's public schools. If nothing is done, it is projected that in 5 years, health care will cost Oregon school districts over $1 billion. That's unacceptable. Senate Bill 426 is a tool that saves money for employers and employees. This session, the Oregon Legislature has a unique opportunity to address this crisis, save taxpayers' dollars, and put more money where it belongs in the classroom. The answer is Senate Bill 426, which would create a health insurance pool for school employees, saving money by buying in bulk. Senate Bill 426 makes good sense. Everyone knows that when you buy in bulk, you save money. And when you pool your money together to make a purchase, you get more bang for your buck. That's the principle behind Senate Bill 426, which allows school districts to save money on health insurance by pooling resources and purchasing health care service in bulk. The state of Oregon already knows this. The Oregon Prescription Drug Program is an example of how bulk purchasing encourages competition while lowering costs for consumers. Health insurance savings pool is projected to save taxpayers more than $50 million a year. That means in 5 years, school districts will have about $270 million more that they can use to reduce class size or to put back programs and ensure a full school year for Oregon students. Senate Bill 426 accomplishes savings by eliminating duplication, reducing administrative costs, and cutting the middleman. At the same time schools are saving money on health care costs, the bill guarantees that benefits for hardworking school district employees will not be reduced. It's a win-win. This is not a new concept. Many of us have been pushing for this critical step for years, but have come up against different interests that are fighting hard to protect the current system. Special interests should be not making money at the expense of Oregon school children. Since 2003, when the House Republicans first proposed the idea of health insurance savings pool for school employees, the issue has been extensively studied. At least three separate studies have taken place in Oregon. The 2003 legislature asked the Department of Education and AON Consulting to conduct a detailed, independent study. The study determined a statewide pool could save as much as $99 million per biennium. OSBA has studied the issue and found that a statewide pool would save $74 million annually if all school districts were required to join OSBA's plan and to pay its royalty. The OSBA memo to Governor Kulongoski from May 28, 2003. The most recent actuarial research by Watson and Wyatt, global actuarial firm, shows that we can save Oregon school districts over $270 million in administrative efficiencies the first 5 years, and that the pool is up and working. National studies on the merits of creating statewide savings pools for school districts have all reached the same conclusion. Minnesota, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Ohio, Montana have all concluded that pooling saves substantial amounts of money, just as administrative efficiencies, from administrative efficiencies, with even more saving potential on things like plan design. There are no studies that conclude the opposite. We have enough information to make an informed decision. We don't need to drag our feet, waste $500,000 to conduct what we already know. Every way you look at it, a statewide pool saves money. One of the great points about health insurance savings pool for school employees is that we'll be saving money without reducing benefits or raising costs. Section 17, subsection 2 of the bill guarantees that the plan will initially provide school districts with comparable benefit at a comparable cost to what they have been before they join the pool. Most insurance carriers will only write an insurance contract for 1 year. This is true for big districts, small districts, and those currently in a voluntary trust like OSBA or OEA choice. Senate Bill 426B guarantees a second year at the same rate or better with level benefits. Senate Bill 426 guarantees that hardworking school district employees will see their benefits reduced, and that at the same time we are accountable to our taxpayers by ensuring that the best and most efficient use of limited dollars. This is exactly what we've been trying to do at the state level for years. Again, it's a win-win. Senate Bill 426 encourages multiple insurance carriers to offer benefit plans through the savings pool, even if they cannot provide benefits on more than a regional basis. Senate Bill 426 anticipates a menu of benefit options that local school districts can choose to provide for their local school district. A formal bid process for school district health insurance plans will encourage competition and transparency amongst carriers. Senate Bill 426 will open up the bid process and allow more Oregon businesses to participate. Additionally, local school districts will still maintain complete authority to determine their budgeting priorities and apply the money they receive from the state to meet the needs of their local community. The makeup of school district health plan, what benefits are included, employee copays, who qualifies for coverage, how costs are shared with employees, will continue to be determined at the local bargaining table. This bill actually provides more local control by freeing money that would have gone to insurance brokers and interests outside of the district so the district can invest them in the classroom. Community colleges. It's also a great plan for them, too. If they choose to join the community colleges, may opt in to the health insurance pool. The reason community colleges are allowed to opt in is because many of them already participate in a health insurance pool with cities and counties for the purpose of saving money on the health insurance. Many of you will ask, why does the bill allow four school districts with their own health insurance trusts or that are self-insured to opt out of the pool if they can provide a comparable benefit package at a price that is comparable or less than that provided to the pool? Research says that you must have the majority of school districts participate to achieve real administrative savings, and all the employees from those four districts represent less than 10% of the total plan participants. You may want to know, why shouldn't my school district be allowed the same opportunity? Some school districts that are self-insured assume all the financial liability and risk for their benefit claims, unlike most school districts that rely on their insurance carrier to assume those same risks. It is an expensive difference. Self-insured districts become self-insured in a deliberate attempt to try to control their health insurance costs at an administrative level. Senate Bill 426 allows them to opt out only if they can show that they are as efficient as the new pool. Just like the local bargaining table, Senate Bill 426 Governance Board has an equal number of management members and labor representatives. The 10 members of the Oregon Educators Benefit Board include four management members, four education employees that represent labor, and two members with expertise in health policy and risk management. The purpose of this division is to ensure that both management and labor share responsibility in plan design and benefit packages with input from experts in the healthcare field, just like they do at the local level. School districts continue to be responsible for determining which plans are made available to their employees and how the cost will be shared between employers and employees. Finally, this is a statutory change, not constitutional. The bill established a legislative task force to look at whether we are accomplishing our goal of saving money by creating a statewide health insurance pool. The task force can make recommendations for future legislative changes and fine-tuning to help us be sure the pool is running as efficiently as possible. In 2003, the Oregonian saw the value of health insurance pool, editorializing that every teacher and school district board member in Oregon ought to favor a plan that would reduce costs, protect benefits, and get more money into schools. I agree. Oregon taxpayers want their elected leaders to be good stewards of their tax dollars. They want us to be accountable with our investments, save money when possible, and ensure that every child in the state has access to quality education. Senate Bill 426 does that. Please join me in voting yes for Senate Bill 426.
Further discussion, Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I rise in opposition to Senate Bill 426, and I have more questions than answers, but I will not ask you any questions. My daughter, Abby, was in my office yesterday working, and as she was organizing the bills and filing, as all of us have the opportunity to see, you know, interns do that in our office, she came to Senate Bill 426, and as she was going through it, she asked the question, where's the staff measure summary? That was my first question. Perhaps there's a clear and compelling argument in favor of the bill, so there is no need for hearings here in the House. Maybe that's a second question. But if that were the case, why are there so many school districts lined up in opposition to it? Senator Frank Morris proposed an independent actuarial study of this proposal, a fundamental procedure for insurance programs, yet none has been done for Oregon. Why? There, on your desk, there is a letter that's signed by over 83 school district members from 83 different school districts, superintendents, and there's a quote that I just want to share that they have on that. We believe it is critical for this study to take place and believe the wait is a small price to pay to ensure the legislature makes an informed business decision on a matter that will profoundly impact so many people. This bill eliminates local control, mandating the creation of a centralized board. Hasn't history shown us over and over again centralized planning has failed? Why are we mandating our schools to go to this model? Insurance professionals provided testimony in the Senate committee that as Regency Blue Cross said, our primary concern with Senate Bill 426 is that the projected cost savings associated with it are unfunded and untested. This was from the state's largest health insurance provider. If mandatory pooling is good for the state, then why are the largest school districts, those that are currently self-insured, exempted from this program? These are just some of the questions that come up as we look at this issue. So, who is supporting this? The teachers' unions and other organizations representing employees? But who is opposing this? A very long list of school districts? Again, I refer that to you on your desk. We have heard over and over again the mantra that it's about children. If this is really about educating our children, then why are we risking money to the classroom for unapproved potential savings? Why the rush? If it is really about the children, as so many of you stated in your campaigns, then why not take the time to make sure this idea can work? I'm not opposed, and I like the idea of being able to save $50 million annually. But to get there, I'd like to ensure that that's the case. I urge your no vote on this.
Representative Schaffler.
Thank you. Because I'm not as tall as I thought I was. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
I've been in government now since 1995 when I went down to my new city hall in Happy Valley to complain and was challenged to get involved, so here I am. But since then, I've been on a budget committee since 1997. I was on 4 years at Happy Valley City Council, and therefore I was a budget committee member. From 2000 on, I'm still on the Sunrise Water Authority Budget Committee. I was on the Subcommittee on Natural Resources 2 years ago, and I was on the Special Committee on Budget a full committee. And I know sometimes making decisions with this kind of money can be scary, and sometimes we have to go on faith and hope that the experts and nice people are right. And we've heard good examples from my friend from Coos Bay about why this is. But, you know, if nothing else, if this bill does nothing else, it will get the OSBA and the OEA out of the insurance business here in the state of Oregon. And that, I think, is a step in the right direction, considering all the conflict it's led to and all these conflicting arguments that we continually get into around here. I think, if nothing else, that's positive. I believe we are going to save money here. My intuition says we are. My good friend behind me pointed out examples of how it has. And we are obligated to find new innovative ways to save money here so that we can put it back into places like the classroom. I had a school board member from David Douglas yesterday on the phone with me, and she was telling me all the cuts that are going to happen if this doesn't work. And finally I said, well, yeah, that would be horrible, and if that happens, we'll have to change it. But then I said, what if we do save money? What are you going to put back into the school? I really did not get, in my opinion, a very good answer. When this does save money, I want to see that money put back into the school, and I want them to come and say exactly how much they've saved and what they're putting back into the school. I look forward to that day. I hope I'm right. I urge your vote. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, in the 03 session, when this concept was first introduced, I was very involved in the discussions around the bill. The reality was that at the time, Oregon was in one of the worst recessions that any of us had ever been involved with, and we were actively working for ways to find money in the K-12 budget that could be put into the classroom. There was a lot of talk that time, or during that session, about the impact of pooling for health insurance purposes. And there were a number of studies, and there was a lot of data on the table. And the problem then is the same as the problem now, that the data was brought forth by two parties that have very opposite political motives and very opposite perspectives. The data that was brought forward by the Oregon School Boards Association and the data that was brought forward by the Oregon Education Association were viewed with much the same skepticism as they're viewed today, depending on your perspective in the process. The Public Employees Benefit Board contracted with their actuary, who was Aon, to do a third-party study. We didn't have any money to put into it at that point, so Aon did the study as kind of a charity case for the state of Oregon. And the study was really interesting because it did show that at that point in time there was a savings to be had by it, but it also showed when those savings were parsed out across all of the school districts in the state that there were winner districts and they were loser districts. And the discussion fell apart at that point in time because there was no time left in the session to have the discussion around what we were going to do to mitigate the impact on the loser districts. So that was the extent of the conversation in the 03 session. In the 05 session, the bill wasn't worked on the House side of the building at all, and it wasn't worked in the budget arena at all. It got some discussion, in my understanding, on the policy side in the Senate. So that brings us to the 07 session. We have data that was presented to the Education Subcommittee of Ways and Means from the Oregon School Boards Association about the impact that the bill would have on the districts, the school districts in the state of Oregon. Because the bill doesn't define a level of health insurance coverage, all it says, as was stated in the opening remarks, the bill defines at first there will be policies that aren't any more expensive or offer any less benefits than the policies that are already in place. But it doesn't define what happens after at first. So in absence of anything at all to be able
able to do a comparison to. OSBA did a comparison to the current cost of benefits that are offered by PEB. That is the basis of the information that all of you have in your bill files from the school districts and the OSBA. The OEA offered a study that took a look at five studies that had been done by other states at various times in the past under various situations. None of these states have actually implemented insurance pooling, so there's no way to be able to say whether the costs that are projected in the studies actually came to be, because there's no basis to compare. There has been no policy committee in the House that's heard this bill this session at all. So the only representatives in this process that have heard public testimony on the bill that aren't involved in the subcommittee of Ways and Means are representatives that were here in the 03 session. Otherwise, nobody's heard from the public on this bill at all. In the Ways and Means Education Subcommittee, we did two public hearings on the bill. So we had about 3 total hours worth of public hearings. Opposed to the bill came forward representatives from all school districts. No school districts testified in favor of the bill, and no community colleges testified in favor of the bill. Testifying in opposition were school districts. Thank you very much. Were school district superintendents, the business agents of school districts, school board members, members of the Community Colleges Association, health insurance providers, and these people brought forward highly technical problems that they saw within the bill, problems about how the bill would impact them as they went about trying to do their business. These were very well thought out, very well presented, and good arguments from the point of view of financial administrators who are very curious and very concerned about how the bill would impact their ability to do business. Testifying in favor of the bills were members of the teachers' union and members of the associations of people that taught at the community colleges. They were very happy not to have to deal with the OSBA any further in budget negotiations, and they were also looking forward to having higher benefits with lower cost. Some of the issues that were raised during the public hearing had to do with the structure of the caps. Virtually every school district in the state of Oregon has a cap on the amount of money that they'll pay for health insurance costs. Above that cap, it's a payroll deduction for the employees. It's very unclear in the language of the bill how the caps will be dealt with when the bill's implemented. There also are legitimate questions around how the benefits to retirees are going to be impacted after this bill is implemented, because the negotiated agreements with retirees are on a different basis. They're actually contractual obligations and are different than the negotiations with the employees. How this bill is going to impact part-time employees is another open question that's very unclear in the language of the bill. How this bill is going to impact unmarried couples is also very unclear from the impact of the bill. How this is going to impact the collective bargaining process is unknown. In fact, what the potential is for cost decrease from pooling is a great unknown in the bill. And as was already mentioned, there was a letter received by the committee from the President of Regents cautioning us on the amount of savings that would be available from pooling, because everyone in the state already that would be subject to this bill is already involved in a very large pool. There is question around language in the bill that gives people that work for school districts the option to buy out of their coverage and the impact that that'll have on districts. There's questions about the level of coverage. There's questions about the cost of implementing the administration of the program and setting up the new OEB agency as opposed to the administrative costs that are already being borne by the districts. There are, in the Ways and Means Subcommittee, there were two amendments offered to the bill. One of them was offered by a very courageous freshman Democrat that asked for a study to the bill. Another one was offered by a senator from Corvallis and myself that also asked for a study to the bill. The difference between these two amendments were in detail. And indeed, all of us went to do our due diligence and sat down with the co-chairs and talked to them about our concerns and the amendments that we wanted to offer. And we began to actually work to craft an amendment that blended the two amendments together. But it was made very clear to us that the amendment was not going to be attached to the bill, and that it was going to be, both of them were going to be voted down in committee. And so we quit working on it, figuring that there was no point continuing something that was just going to end up being turned down by the committee. And indeed, that's what happened. Both of those amendments were voted down primarily on party lines in the Ways and Means Subcommittee for Education. There is a lot of work that needs to be done here that hasn't been studied. That you'll hear from people, I'm sure, that a lot of this stuff can't be quantified.
Representative Morgan, pause for just a second. Representative Smith yields.
Thank you very much. But there are a lot of these things that can be studied and a lot of things that can be cleared up from the perspective of the school districts and the community colleges and can help answer questions or can help raise things that need to be mitigated so that this can be implemented smoothly. It's clear that we can gauge the costs of taking away competition in the insurance markets. We can quantify what potential savings there are from putting people in larger pools than they are already. We can quantify the administrative costs of the OEB overhead as compared to the administrative costs of the system that is in place right now. We can quantify the impacts on retirees, on part-timers, on unmarried partners. We can figure out whether there are districts that are winners or losers under this new plan. We can figure out who will gain from the cap, because it became very clear in the discussion in Ways and Means that unless the savings for the cost of insurance overall can be in excess of 10%, the cap will cost more than 10% to buy the cap down. So saying that this is a bill that will pass money on to the classrooms is a very far from certain proposal. So here we are, colleagues, on the floor of the House, and we're about to take what's going to be a very highly partisan vote on a very important piece of state public policy. Please be very clear that this bill does not guarantee cost savings. The cost savings are far from certain. Please be very clear that this bill doesn't guarantee that there will be more money to go to classrooms. Please be very clear that we are stuffing this bill down the throats of the school districts and the school boards and the community college boards of the state of Oregon. Please be very sure that Oregonians deserve a far less political and a much more thoughtful public policy. I urge your no vote on this bill.
Further discussion, Representative Crummell.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I have some questions, and so I'm wondering if the carrier would be willing to yield.
Question of the carrier, will the carrier yield?
Yes.
He does?
Thank you, Representative. My first question is around the summary that came out of the Ways and Means Committee. And on page 3 of 4, under Summary of Revenue Changes, it states that eventually OEBB will be supported by an administrative fee not to exceed 2% of the monthly employer-employee contributions for the plan. It says prior to June 30th, 2011, the OEBB will reimburse all general fund any PEB revenues related to the OEBB implementation. So what we're going to do is we're going to front the money for this from the general fund and hope that the OEB board is going to be able to pay it back. Is that correct?
Yes.
Thank you. Further question?
Additional question of the carrier, do you yield?
Yep, I do.
He does?
Thank you, Representative. We have not yet seen the state school fund bill, House Bill 5020. Do we know what the effect of the general fund expenditure $5 million is going to have on the state school fund at this particular point in time?
Has not been discussed, as I understand it.
Thank you. Further question, Mr. Speaker?
Further question, do you yield?
I do.
He does.
Thank you, Representative. On page 3 of the summary from Ways and Means, and also in the summary on the front of the bill, it makes the statements that the money is being that $4.9 million is going to be appropriated to the Oregon Department of Education during 07-09, and that ODE then is going to pay DAS, who will oversee the operations and implementation of this whole project. So can you help me understand why it is that we have two agencies involved in this?
My understanding is that ODE generally deals with these education funds. However, they're subcontracting with DAS because they have more understanding of the insurance issues.
Thank you. Further question?
Additional question, do you yield?
I do.
He does?
Thank you, Representative. Also on page 3 of the Ways and Means summary, at the very bottom, it says that there will be that it will be necessary to remodel the leased space PEB currently occupies, which the lease expires in November of this year, or to relocate to accommodate the additional staff. And this is talking about the 19 permanent positions and 2-5 temporary positions for OEB. Can this be done by June?
The department is looking at it right now. The lease is up, and they are looking at options.
Thank you. Further question?
Further question, do you yield?
I do.
He does.
Thank you, Representative. On page 4 of 4 on the staff or on the Ways and Means summary, in the middle of the or the end of the first paragraph there, it says it should be noted that any shortfall in the assessment funds will need to be backfilled with general fund. And we're talking about assessments, I'm assuming, to DAS or from DAS to ODE for the operation of this So what we really are saying with that is that we really don't know how much this thing is going to cost yet, do we?
It is the best estimate at this time, so they don't know absolutely.
Okay. Thank you. Further question?
Additional question, do you yield?
I do.
He does.
Thank you, Representative. On the front of the bill and also back at, I believe it's page 3 in the bill, it exempts this board from public contracts. Can you help me understand why we want to exempt this board from the public contracting policies of the state?
I do not know the answer to that question. I will find it for you, sir.
Thank you. Are we holding while you find it, or okay? Further question, Mr. Speaker?
Additional question?
Yes.
He yields.
Thank you, Representative. On page 7 of the bill, in section 14, it describes quite well in detail what's going to happen and who's going to be exempted and who's not and who has to come into it and that sort of thing. But one thing, starting on line 29 that I find interesting is that it says, once employees of a district participate in benefit plans provided and administered by the board, the district may not thereafter provide or contract for benefit plans other than those provided and administered by the board. So basically what we are doing is we are setting up, whether it's going to work or not, we're setting up a statewide monopoly as far as health insurance for school districts is concerned, correct?
They cannot opt out once in, yes.
So they're setting up a monopoly. Further question, Mr. Speaker?
Additional question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
I do.
Carrier yields.
Thank you, Representative. On page 10 of the bill, on page 10 of the bill, in section 20, it talks about the task force being created on the educator health benefits, and it's going to consist of 6 members, and then it goes on and describes what they're going to do. But this group is not going to be constituted until, if I'm not mistaken, until like 2012, as noted on line 24 of page 11. So can you tell me the rationale behind doing the study after we've already implemented it instead of doing the study before we implement it to see if it's really going to do what we think it's going to do?
I think we've done the studies before. What we're asking for here is that as it gets fully implemented, we have an oversight group of people, responsible people in this legislature, to come back and show us if there are things that need to be adjusted, if it's working perfectly, if in fact it is doing what we've expected it to do. And I believe in all such bills, it's nice to have, as we've talked about on this floor before, an oversight going on as time goes on.
Thank you. Thank you. Further question? Mr. Speaker?
Further question of the carrier. Does carrier yield?
Absolutely.
Carrier yields.
Thank you, Representative. Can you help me understand why the largest health insurance company in the state has suggested that we do a study first and that we not dive into this at this time when, in fact, they probably stand the most to gain?
I really have not talked with them and have no idea why they have made that suggestion.
Thank you. Further question, Mr. Speaker?
Further question of the carrier. Does carrier yield?
Certainly.
Carrier yields.
Thank you, Representative. I have some emails from school administrators, and I understand why the OSBA as an organization might be against this bill, but can you help me understand why school administrators from probably all over my district and maybe all over yours too have written in and said this is bad public policy and we shouldn't be doing this?
I really can't explain their motives why. Now, if you would like, as a past administrator, I would suggest that when I know a given, even if it's going to cost more money, but I know what it is and I can plan, I'm a little more confident with that than I am when I have to take that new step off of something. So it is an issue. And that's my issue, as every time I looked at something as administrator and I had things planned and going, even if it was costing me more, I felt comfortable knowing that as opposed to the unknown. And so I think for some, that may be an issue. But I certainly would wish not to speak for any of them.
Thank you. And further question, Mr. Speaker?
Additional question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
I do.
Carrier does.
Thank you. I believe that in the bill, of course, it doesn't have them named because we can't do that, but in the bill, 3 very large school districts in the state are going to actually be exempted from this. If we want to pull in the largest employers in the state and we want to increase the size of the pool so that everybody's in it, why are we suggesting that we exempt those large school districts from this particular action?
The only districts, and there is also one that is not so large, and I'm not sure that they're all the largest, but considering the districts that are exempted is because they have their own self-insurance, and they have made a decision to incur, as I explained in my opening remarks, to incur all the liability associated with self-insurance. That's why we have chosen those to be exempt in this bill.
Okay. Thank you. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, I think you can see that there are still a lot of questions that, in my mind at least, are unresolved with regards to this kind of action and this legislation. From my personal perspective, I don't really care about the fact that the OSBA as an organization is against it and that 60% of their operating revenues may go in the tank. That's not my problem. But my problem is that I have administrators from the school districts in my district that are saying, in my legislative district, that are saying this is not good public policy. This is not something that we need to be doing. I had one administrator actually question why, and that was why my question with regards to the large school districts, why we want to have a legislative mandate on every district except for Portland, North Clackamas, and Medford. Those are the three districts that are self-insuring right now and would not fall under under this bill. I had another administrator in House District 26 that said he worries about this becoming another PERS debacle like we had a few years ago, and that then we will be needing to reform it. I have another administrator in my district that really questions whether or not the supporting information with this bill is really valid information, and whether or not it is giving us the information that kind of information that we should have when we're setting a policy like this. I'm concerned that what we're doing is that we're going to set up a statewide monopoly. And we can look at the PEB board and we can say, you know, PEB is working very well for all of the state employees. A common denominator, though, is that's something that we can control in that in terms of the state employees. However, there are some problems in PEB just simply because we have people that work for the state that live in Ontario and Lakeview and places where some of the preferred providers, for example, aren't available. And so they kind of get stuck into a certain place. PEB does a very good job. The thing that I'm also concerned about is the fact that we're sort of saying to OEB, if we create it, go out, recreate the wheel, PEB administrator, you don't have enough to do, so we're going to put this on you too. Get this thing up and running and have it done by April. Because I don't know if anybody noticed, but the bill says that this thing is going to be up and running in April of 2007. That's next month, ladies and gentlemen. And I don't see how we get from here to there in less than 30 days. I also don't see how we get from here to there as far as hiring 19 new people, actually 24 new people, to get this thing up and running, and we do that in June. I don't even see how we get it done by November, and I also don't see how the PEB headquarters gets either remodeled or relocated in June. We're talking about the Treasurer's Office and the Ways and Means Committee that I sit on, and the Treasurer's Office is talking about a year and a half out to do any kind of a relocation and some of the things that they're wanting to do. How are we going to do this with this agency in less than 30 days, in less than 60 days, in less than 90 days? I have some real questions about that, and I have some real problems with that. I think that the idea is worth continuing to look at. I do agree with the president of Blue Cross Blue Shield when he says that we need to have a third-party, independent, completely independent study done to see if this is something that really makes any sense for the state to go into. I know that I am going to have some constituents that are going to have angst over the fact that I'm going to vote against this bill. But I also have some constituents that are going to be very happy about the fact that I'm going to vote against this bill. And I, you know, pride myself on listening to my constituents. I think that there are too many unresolved questions. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion, Representative Wisnant.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Question of the carrier.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
I do.
Carrier yields.
I think it's important. We have a lot of new members in this body, and the sheet from the Ways and Means is important. I'd like to clarify with the carrier that it's 2% total administrative cost. Does that include the building?
It's up to 2%. It could be less, but we don't know if it includes the building.
Follow-up question, Mr. Speaker.
Additional question. Does carry yield?
But
I do.
So what is the 2% administrative cost covering?
It is to cover the costs of OWEB, this new organization, in managing the plans. It's their cost in managing the plans.
Follow-up clarification, Mr. Speaker.
Clarification, does the carrier yield?
I do.
He does.
Well, are we talking about desks, chairs, phones, communication, fax equipment, cell phones, cars?
Yes. I have been told yes.
Follow-up, Mr. Speaker.
A follow-up question, do you yield?
I do.
Carrier yields.
Thank you. So you can confirm to this body that the total administrative cost of this new organization will be 2%, and that will include all the costs except the building, the utilities, I guess, for that building, but it will include everything else. So we can always look forward that this is not going to take away from the school system more than 2%.
That is my understanding.
Thank you. To the bill, Mr. Speaker.
To the bill.
Honorable colleagues, this is an important vote. Because this is talking about taking money, either saving money or taking money away, according to your position and your vote, from our school, our children, our classrooms, our teachers. Some of my colleagues have said that they're voting for it because of scale of economy. In one of the handouts we've received, the National Association of State Personnel Executives stated, "The largest purchasing pools typically do not save anything for the large state government employees, since the scale of economy is usually achieved at around 20,000 participants in a park." Honorable colleagues, I have to oppose this bill, and I oppose it as a conservative person. I want to save money. I want to save money for the state to put more teachers and have smaller classrooms. But I'm not convinced that we've gotten there from all the testimony you've heard today. Also, I raise an opposition because I don't know. I haven't been on a negotiating board. I haven't bought any insurance in a long time because I've been on the public payroll in the military and now here in this body. But I went to my school districts. I asked my school districts, is this a good bill or not? They're the ones that are out there buying insurance for their employees, their teachers. And you have on your desk a handout from what my people told me. They said, vote no, Gene. Redmond School District says, I do not support SB 426. We need a comprehensive study commissioned by the legislature to see if this is right. Sister School District, the additional cost of the proposed plan would be $560,000 for the Sister School District. 7 classroom teachers. The High Desert ESD, which also services Madras and Jefferson and Crook County. I have not seen anything that convinces me that SB 426 would lower cost. The Ben Lapine School District, the 5th largest in the state. I believe that before the state jumps into this pooling proposal, a credible third party be employed to conduct a thorough analysis to determine both short and long-term savings. I'm not sure that provisions in the bill enable us to save. Our school board is opposed to SB 426. Central Oregon Community College, the projected cost savings are nothing more than speculation. An Oregon actuary study could cost a fraction of the $5 to $7 million implementation cost of SB 426. Honorable colleagues, this is an important vote, and what we're doing is affecting the classroom. Don't be disillusioned by anything else. We're either going to save money or it's going to cost more. I don't know. I haven't done those contracts, but my people that have their boots on the ground, they say it's going to cost them more money. Please vote no for this bill.
Further discussion, Representative Galizio.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill?
To the bill.
Colleagues, it's been said that bureaucracy defends the status quo long past the time when the quo has lost its status. You know, sometimes leadership requires making decisions that not everyone agrees with immediately. And I understand there are concerns and questions, but if you're looking for absolute certainty, may I suggest that being a legislator is not perhaps the best chosen profession. Nobody here has a crystal ball. We try to look at the evidence and make a wise decision. A couple things I'd like to respond to from previous speakers. The representative from District 15 claimed that SB 426 eliminates local control. Well, I think if he had been able to be at some of our hearings in the Ways and Means Education Sub, he would have found out that local school districts and local education associations, through collective bargaining, will make the decisions. It will be between employees and employers. Collective bargaining and local control remains in this bill. So it's just simply inaccurate to say that it takes away local control. Why rush? The representative from District 15 said, why rush? As has been said before, we've had 6 years of studies.
Representative Wisnett, for what purpose do you rise?
Point of order.
Point of order. Please state your point.
I think that the speaker is questioning my leadership ability to make a decision.
I would like to remind the speaker that in speaking, you must confine discussion to the question under debate, avoid personalities, and do not impugn the motives of another member's vote or argument.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Thanks.
Not intending to do so, so I apologize if that's the way it came across. Representative from House District 15 claimed that this was rushed through the process. Well, number one is, as I said before, it's been 6 years in the making. We have studies through and through. And I have here in my hands lists of over 55 people who over 3 days have testified on this bill. Senate Education Committee and in our committee in the Joint Ways and Means Subcommittee on Education. So there was plenty of time to listen to and hear the arguments of those both in opposition and in support. So in no way was this rushed through. We had amendments. We had a rigorous, robust discussion in the Ways and Means Committee and on the other side of this House. There are lots of questions. There are lots of questions. However, again, you know, doubt is not a real pleasant condition, but certainty is really an absurd one. You're not going to have certainty. Colleagues, from a business perspective, just imagine this. Somebody testified to this. I thought it was an excellent point on this bill. Can you imagine any business with 200 affiliates who would each negotiate their own insurance plan and then ask them to send the bill to the corporate headquarters? That would be absurd on its face. But that's the status quo that we have. No alternative plan has been offered. I mean, if we want certainty, I can tell you what is certain. The status quo is unsustainable. That is what is certain. Double-digit increases with health care costs. That is certain that we will have. I know it's a typical reaction in government and bureaucracies to ask for more studies and more time. And let's think about it some more. What's certain is that the status quo is unsustainable, and it is our job to act and make a decision and to prevent the hemorrhaging that is taking place in our schools. No alternative plan has been offered. And in the field of healthcare benefits, it is advantageous to have a large size, a large pool of employees. You have lower per capita administration costs. There's more bargaining power with insurance companies. And a larger group has more stable...
Representative Barker yields.
Thank you, Representative. A larger group, a larger pool, has more stable demographics. If you have a small group of employees to insure, the insurance company has to be concerned about catastrophic costs in a small group that are completely unexpected. If you have a larger group with a more stable demographic, you have a better opportunity. Colleagues, we've had a lot of studies. All of them have shown the same thing. There are questions about the studies, but all of them show the same thing. Tens of millions of dollars in savings. So I, for one, would like that money to go to the classroom, and I think that's where most Oregonians are. So in the end, I would say you can either support the status quo, which is unsustainable, or you can look at the evidence and try to save taxpayer dollars, get the money into the classroom, and act. And I would urge you to act now to get the savings and support this bill. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I have a question of the carrier.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
I do.
Carrier does.
You referenced your experience as an administrator, so you have much more than I do, but I'm wondering, did you hear from administrators in your district, and if so, what was their feeling on this?
Most of the district administrators that contacted me were very worried about this bill and would have encouraged me to vote no.
Thank you. To the bill, Mr. Speaker.
To the bill.
Many of my colleagues have expressed what they've heard from their districts, and I want to do the same. The reason I want to do that is because it was expressed to me in such strong terms, I feel compelled to say so today. I shop at Costco. I believe in buying bulk. And I also find bargains elsewhere. So the bulk argument is not swaying me today, because I don't think there is enough independent information to make that case. It's a good argument. It just hasn't been made. I have to admit that I've relied heavily on Representative Morgan to keep me informed as we monitor this bill, as I'm sure all of you have relied on other folks that have been on the committee. But despite how helpful she has been, and she has been, I rely very heavily on three superintendents in my district who have come to me and said that this is going to cost them money. And it's not just them squawking. These are people with, as I've already indicated, far more experience in buying health insurance for school districts than I ever hoped to have. And they're very credible, and they're very hardworking, and they're very responsible, and they have worked a long time at buying in bulk for our districts in Silverton and Malala, and also the RESD. And they've monitored this bill, and they've monitored the discussion prior to my ever coming into this body. And they have convinced me that for my district, and that's what I'm speaking for my District 18, this is going to cost in the millions of dollars. That's first and foremost in my mind, that regardless of where we go, this is going to cost my districts millions of dollars. They remain unconvinced that there's any independent or conclusive data to show long-term cost savings, which they're very interested in. My good colleague from Happy Valley, who represents my parents, made a case for the other side, and I always enjoy listening to him, and there are a number of fantastic qualities that he has. Intuition never entered my mind in thinking of his good qualities, so I'm going to have to reject the idea that we go on intuition, and I'm going to go on facts presented to me by supers in my district. I know it's traditional to end your comments with, I urge your no vote. And I don't urge a showdown here between Republicans and Democrats, and I don't urge a showdown with the OEA, but I do urge us to pull back and find a better way to do this. I don't know if we're rushing or we're not rushing, but I don't think we're agreeing on the facts, and maybe there's more discussion and more debate to be had. So I thank you for your time and attention. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Gelser.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Question of the carrier, please.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
I do.
Carrier yields.
Thank you. Will this bill require school districts to offer a cash payout to employees who choose to opt out of their district's benefit plan?
And before I answer, I do want to thank Representative Gelser for having gotten the questions to me early. I have appreciated that. It gives some much probably more thorough answers. The answer to the first question is no. The Oregon Educators Benefit Board will not have the authority to direct districts to offer a cash-out plan for their employees. The bill does allow OEBB to negotiate for and to offer flexible benefit plans, and these plans may include a cash-out option. However, the school districts are not mandated to purchase flexible benefit plans. That is a decision that would be made at the local collective bargaining table.
Thank you. Further question of the carrier, please?
Further question, is the carrier yield?
Yes.
He does.
Thank you. Will this bill require school districts or participating community colleges to offer health insurance to employees who are working less than half-time?
No. The bill specifically exempts employees working less than half-time as eligible for benefits through OEBB. OEBB will not have the authority to mandate that local school districts offer coverage to employees working less than part-time who are not currently eligible for benefits.
Thank you. Further question of the carrier, please?
Further question, does the carrier yield?
Yes.
Thank you.
He does.
Will this legislation remove the ability of school districts to bargain at the local level for issues related to benefits, including the cost of benefits, employee contributions to their benefits, employer caps on benefits, and the type and structure of benefit plan offered?
No. All of these issues remain local collective bargaining issues. OEBB has no authority to impact current or future negotiated caps on health insurance cost increases or locally negotiated employee contribution arrangements. OEBB must offer a wide range of benefit packages and plans in a variety of designs and costs. Local school districts will continue to bargain about which type of plan to offer to employees, including structure and cost. The bill specifically protects collective bargaining rights in Section 15, Sub 3. It reads, nothing in Sections 1 through 14 of this Act, 2007 Act, may be construed to expand or contract collective bargaining rights or collective bargaining obligations.
Thank you. Further question of the carrier, please.
Further question, is the carrier yield?
Yes.
He does.
As discussed earlier, this bill allocates about $5 million to the startup costs of the Oregon Educators Benefit Boards. When the task force meets and issues its report on whether or not this project has saved money, will those costs be included in that evaluation?
These costs will be considered in the savings because all funds must be repaid to OEBB prior to completion of the study.
Further question of the carrier?
Further question, do you yield?
I do.
He does.
What protections are in the bill to protect districts who come into the pool in that first year from having a balloon payment in the second year, so that they that hold harmless clause in the first year? What happens to them in the years further to protect them?
Plans offered to some districts must be available to all districts. The Oregon Educators Benefit Board cannot charge some districts more money for the same plans available to other districts for less money. In addition, the OEBB is limited in statute to a tightly capped 2% administrative fee, which will then cover their operational, negotiation, and administrative expenses. Expenditures of this board will be transparent, as they must be legislatively approved. In addition, the board is prohibited from maintaining more than 5% of monthly premium costs on hand for more than 6 months at one time.
Thank you. Further question of the carrier, please.
Further question, is the carrier yield?
I do.
He does.
Thank you. This question came to me from my local school board chair. Will school districts be required to make a contribution to long-term care benefits of employees if this bill passes?
No. The bill allows OEBB to make long-term care benefits available for purchase. However, the bill specifically states that unless agreed to in collective bargaining, the eligible employee is solely responsible for the payment of a long-term care benefit package.
Thank you. And one final question of the carrier, please.
A final question. Do you yield?
I do.
He does.
Thank you. And this question also comes from one of the districts that I represent. The Corvallis School District currently benefits from a self-insurance arrangement for dental and vision benefits, which are saving our school district a considerable amount of money. Under this bill, will the Corvallis School District be forced to give up their self-insured benefit for dental and vision insurance?
No, your district will not be forced to give up its self-insured benefit if it is saving district money. Senate Bill 426 will allow your district to maintain its self-insured vision and dental benefits. To maintain the benefit after October 1, 2010, the district must demonstrate that their self-insured benefit offers an equal or better benefit for an equal or better price than that offered by OEBB. In other words, as long as self-insured benefit is saving your district money, the district will be able to maintain it.
Thank you. To the bill?
To the bill.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Like many of you, I've spent much of the last couple of months hearing from people in my local school districts about this bill and from people in this building as well, proponents and opponents. And I think what everyone has in common is a desire to see as many dollars as possible in our classrooms reaching our students. I found that as I've talked to my local school districts, I believe that the fears that they have are very real. And in determining my decision-making points, I found that I needed to strip away the fears and the political arguments and look for the facts. I began my investigation of this bill actually in opposition to it. Until just a few months ago, I was a member of the Corvallis School Board. I was finishing up a five-year term there where I had the opportunity for 5 years to look the reality of inadequate funding of our public schools directly in the face. You could see that in the faces of the elementary school students and the schools that we had to close during my tenure there, in the faces of the high school students who can't attend school all day because of budgetary constraints, and in the faces of staff and administrators, teachers, classified staff, who we ask every session to do more with inadequate staffing. As this bill moved forward, because of that, I talked to people in this building in favor and in opposed. I'll tell you in a minute about an opinion I got from legislative counsel. But I also turned to the person that I've learned to trust most on issues of school finance and benefits, and that is my school district's business manager, who I've worked with for several years. From those discussions, I came up with some key questions that I needed to have answered before I could choose to vote in favor and opposition to this bill. And what was most important to me was getting assurance that this bill was not going to cost school districts money. Like many of you, I was very alarmed by the sheets of paper that came talking about what it was going to cost my school district. So the questions that I wanted answered were, what are the protections to the collective bargaining rights? What are the protections around covering benefits for part-time staff that districts might not currently be covering? Would districts be required to pay a cash out? What about for my local school district, their self-insurance, since the bill didn't seem to speak directly to smaller benefit plans? And what about this idea of a balloon payment in the second year or costs going up after that initial hold harmless issue? And, of course, the cost of setting up the Oregon Educator Benefits Board. I shared with Representative Roblin yesterday, with the carrier of the bill, the opinion that I got back from Legislative Council on many of those issues. And when I went to the Legislative Council, it was in part to find that neutral third party. We employ Legislative Council as our legal advice, as the people that can tell us what it is that our bills mean. I came away from those conversations assured that the collective bargaining rights of our local school districts are maintained through this bill, that our school districts will not be required to pick up individuals that they are not currently covering. The Oregon Educator Benefits Board will not have the authority to tell community colleges who choose to participate in the board or local school districts to treat their employees that work less than part-time the same as their full-time employees in terms of health insurance benefits. I became convinced through my own study that school districts are protected by the very structure of this board, the phased-in approach that school districts come in and that hold harmless clause from facing significant increased costs in the subsequent years of the bill after they come into the program. If you think about it, some school districts will come in 2008. When those districts come in, under that hold harmless clause, they automatically experience a one-year artificial freeze on the increase of their health costs because those benefits must be offered to them at the same price they paid the year before. And the following year, they don't have that guarantee, but they're protected by those new school districts that are coming in who have to come in at the same cost that they paid that previous year. All of the benefits that are offered by OEB have to be offered to all of the school districts that are buying. So you can't increase the cost in one school district in order to pay the cost of another. This goes all the way through 2010, at which point we start the task force study, which is an automatic hook for accountability to produce the study back to us that demonstrates whether or not there has been savings. So I feel assured that the motivation on this board is going to be to protect local school districts and to keep the costs down. I did support the amendment that the representative from Hillsborough, who's described as a courageous freshman, made to implement the study, and the folks there, that was not a successful amendment. And I think that ultimately the difficulty with that type of study is there are no guarantees for the future. We cannot know what is going to happen next. But what I am satisfied with is that this plan is not going to cost our school districts money. Ultimately, I am satisfied by this, and I find that I'm in a place where I have a choice to make a safe risk. There's a measured risk. There's always a risk. But the potential outcome on the other end... Should I keep going? Okay, sorry. The potential outcome is a benefit for our school district.
Representative Rosenbaum yields.
Thank you. By taking a measured risk, we have a potential benefit to do something better that we have. In the meantime, all of our districts experience that artificial first-year freeze by their health insurance costs going up. Although I am satisfied by these things, I would be dishonest if I did not tell you my local school district is not. And I recognize that when I cast my vote today, I will be casting a vote that is at variance with what some people that I have tremendous respect for will disagree with. However, my responsibility here is greater than to make people that I trust happy. The best that I can do is take the concerns, study them with measured thought, talk to everybody that's involved, and make the best decision that I can for moving forward for the children in the state of Oregon. I think that this is a reasonable risk to take. It does not guarantee savings in the future. I feel certain it's not going to cost districts money, and I'm very hopeful that as we move forward, it's going to save money for our districts. Finally, as we move forward, it's in all of our best interests to come together around this bill. I hope that the governor, in appointing the task force, will reach out and proactively pull some of those who are most skeptical about this bill onto the Oregon Educator Benefits Board. I think that that will provide some important protections and allow us to make sure that board is making very sound decisions that can be supported by those across the state. Thank you for listening to these thoughts, and I hope that you will join me in taking a safe and measured risk that has the potential to put more money in our classrooms. Thank you.
Further discussion? Representative Flores.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Question of the carrier.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
I do.
Carrier yields.
Thank you, Representative, and I do apologize for not having given you the questions in advance. In the front of the bill, where it kind of gives us the summary in about the middle, it talks about when the plans are first provided to district and district employees can choose benefit plans that are comparable to in design to and are not more expensive than comparable costs of benefit plans provided by district immediately before purchase of benefit plans provided by board. How is that guaranteed?
By Section 17, number subsection 2 of this bill, it is in statute, and that is going to be a requirement of the board.
Clarification in an overview advisory and
a clarification. Does the carrier yield?
I will.
He does.
The function of the board is to monitor each school district's purchase and offerings.
Yes, legislative council agreed with that in this opinion that the statute, as written, requires that. And if they can't offer it, I would assume we can't do it. So it is a requirement of this bill that they offer the plans that are comparable and in price and value.
Thank you. Additional question?
Additional question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
I do.
Carrier yields.
Thank you. And with all of the discussion about local control, could you please tell me how local control is protected if once a district is part of this state-run insurance plan and then a district is unable to find a better deal elsewhere?
Once they are in the plan, the issue then becomes they have to stay within that plan and they can continue to negotiate within that plan. There is no exception out, so I guess I couldn't answer that question other way than say that once you're in, you're in.
Thank you. Additional question?
Additional question is carrier yield?
Yes.
Carrier does.
Can you tell us in the contemplations that were provided, let's see, it wasn't the House Committee, it was the Subcommittee on Education, Ways and Means, if there was discussion about how many other states in the country have this kind of medical insurance pool in place?
Wait 1 second, and I'll have an answer for you. I don't believe that there was any discussion of that.
Thank you. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, as we're talking about looking at the evidence, and as we are talking about looking at alternative plans, one of the school districts that neighbors my house district, and I think some of you may have received an email, asked that very question. Answer is there are only three states in the country that have this kind of medical plan in place, so we don't really have a really wide, deep, and rich pool from which to make some sort of analysis on the effectiveness of this type of insurance plan. And in order to look at the effectiveness, she says, and she is a vice chair of a school board, said we rely on that type of information. We rely on looking at the evidence of the longitudinal studies on the effectiveness, the cost savings, and this bill doesn't provide it. What it does underscore is that, yes, having been in the discussion process since 2003, there have been competing interests and competing studies, competing analysis, but never independent analysis, because we have not saw fit to bring those independent analyses forward. Further, I note in Section 25 of the bill, where there's $4,996,081 that is appropriated to the Department of Education to expend on the cost of the Oregon Educators Benefit Board. And when we say this will not adversely affect our children, we err in not considering that $5 million could be going to the classroom for our children rather than our statewide benefits. I also have some information and resolutions from a coastal school district who has some very serious concerns about this bill. And I will, just for the purposes of brevity, cut very quickly to the quick. And he states, Oregon educators already enjoy one of the richest benefit packages in the nation. Now, colleagues, before you jump, that was reported in the Oregonian in spring of 2004. Do they really need, and more importantly, do you really want to enshrine the remaining portion of their benefit package in law? And can you effectively manage those benefit packages from Salem? For 35 years, legislation has been focusing on protecting the adults involved in the education process. Is it time for the pendulum to swing in favor of students who don't have paid lobbyists and who cannot give campaign contributions. I suggest, colleagues, this does need some independent analysis, and on this bill, I would urge you to vote no.
Further discussion, Representative Dellum.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
To the bill?
To the bill. It is with great interest that I experience deja vu. 25 years ago, 56 schools had this same discussion. They were faced with ever-increasing insurance premium costs brought on by new technology, pharmaceutical costs accelerating at a rate that we couldn't keep pace. And so we put together a pool. The 56 schools elected a board, elected a president, and set out to make insurance cheaper. All of the arguments that have been made today were made then. The first 18 months of the pool, we did recognize some savings. The clause in the contract said that initially any school that entered the pool would be guaranteed the same coverage, cheaper cost, coverage down to the T crossed, the I dotted, all sentences the same, an exact overlay over present policy. In the second 18 months, the board struggled. They struggled because they had created a pool, but they hadn't controlled inflation. And in the final 18 months, we could not compete with the privates that did this professionally. We had people in the business that wanted to control premium, not provide insurance. And as a result, the pool collapsed, went away, and we're back to the privates providing the insurance. All of the arguments I heard then, I am hearing now. There was savings. It was not long term. We had the wrong people doing the business. I plead with you to maintain the status quo. Vote no.
Representative Maurer.
To the bill, Mr. Speaker.
To the bill.
I had the pleasure of serving on a school board for several years before I got activated back into the Army back in 2004. And at that point, I was chair of the school board. And we, for several years, had the discussion about whether or not our school district would self-insure. I had encouraged the school district to self-insure. I had pleaded with them to self-insure. I said, we need to come up with innovative ways of reducing our health care costs. And that process took a couple years, a year and a half after I left, and ultimately they did self-insure. And the reason they self-insured is because the local union agreed, the administration agreed, and the public agreed that that was going to save money for Grants Pass School District Number 7. And about about October of this year, or last year, the school district was involved with the state insurance board, and the state insurance board was not happy with the way that arrangement was working under the law that existed at that time and still exists today. But at that point, they were expected to save about $700,000 in the district because they were self-insured. As we go forward, they are not going to have that opportunity to self-insure and be creative and innovative in coming up with new ways to save money that they could put back into the classroom. And why is that important today, and why is it important in 426? 426 does not offer an escape valve for school districts. If 426 had an escape valve, I think the discussion might be a whole lot different. But the reality is that the districts that are self-insured today are going to have a very difficult time into the future in matching what the state does, because they're going to have to match benefit levels as well as cost. Benefit levels in the Rogue Valley are different than they are in Portland. They're different than they are in Eugene. And part of that is because of your provider base. When you don't have a provider base like you do in Portland, you have to look at benefit packages a little different. So I urge you to reconsider 426, and as we move forward, I ask you to reconsider whether or not we need to amend this bill to allow an escape valve for those districts that don't fit inside the Willamette Valley box in health care services. I urge you to vote no, but if you're going to vote yes, let's revisit this soon. Let's look at other bills, other avenues to amend an escape clause for school districts that want to be creative, that want to be innovative, and want to put more money in the classroom. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Bruin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the bill.
To the bill.
Thank you. Colleagues, I have supported the concept of insurance health care pooling since we started this session back in January. And in fact, I vigorously supported this concept publicly during the entire 2006 legislative election. And you'll see from the desk letter that I am one of the beneficiaries of the of financing from the Oregon Teachers Association, from the OEA. I also publicly supported the concept of health insurance pooling during the 2005 legislative session. Prior to that, during the 2004 campaign season, I also publicly and vigorously supported the concept of insurance health pooling. And in that particular cycle, the OEA endorsed my opponent very vigorously. I also supported this prior to being a legislator. I've supported the concept of insurance health pooling since 2003, when as a private citizen, I first read about it in no other place but the Oregonian, the idea that the original bill that was proposed and the idea behind pooling and the cost savings. And I have supported it in 2003, 2004, 2005, 2006, and today, because as a businessman and as somebody who has studied business and economics my entire adult life and even, sadly, some of my child life, and somebody who has been in business his entire adult life, I absolutely firmly believe in the concepts that have been addressed in the principles of economy of scale. And in fact, I'll take it one step further. I know that you cannot prove economies of scale, but I have never once in my career of both doing it and studying it, I have never seen an occasion where economies of scale haven't reduced costs with either procurement or production. I have never seen that, Mr. Speaker. Some would suggest that the endorsement that's represented in this floor letter is because of my support of insurance health care pooling, and that's probably true. I'm going to guarantee that endorsement didn't come from my longstanding advocacy for reducing capital gains taxes. So I'm going to go with the health care pooling. That's a good bill. Colleagues, I just want you to know that there are a lot of questions with this, and we can't answer all those questions. But I have yet to, as I've already mentioned, I've yet to see an occasion where pooling and economy of scale has not worked. And there's one other issue. That's my primary reason, but there's one other issue I'd like to get on the table. There's been a lot of discussion, a lot of emotional discussion about local control, and I am absolutely sensitive to the issue of local control. But I think with all humility, that we need to be honest about the issue of local control. Folks, we effectively gave up, whatever, however you want to term it, the lion's share, the blood and the guts of local control when this state passed Measure 5 15 years ago. Now, I'm not talking about what my teacher teaches my second grade at Sunset High School in West Lynn. That's local control, and God bless that, and that needs to stay the same. But the way we finance schools in our state right now have, for the most part, sent local control out the door. I wish it weren't so. If I could push one of these buttons right now and go back to the way it was, in all honesty, if I could go back to have my district, the people of West Lynn, pay for their schools out of property taxes and us be responsible for the schools in West Lynn, I would push that button right now, but I don't have that option, Mr. Speaker. So we have the way we finance schools right now. Let's make sure that we as public people, that we as legislators have all the tools on the table. PERS is on the table. We can see that as legislators. But health care expense, an expense that's been going up 10 to 12% per year per school district, we put the money in, but we have no control, we have no oversight, we have no pressure, honestly, to drive down those costs in the current system. Let this be the model for the way we manage school finances going forward, and I will probably say another thing that won't get me the endorsement of the OEA, but maybe this is another step to statewide collective bargaining. If we're going to finance schools statewide, we need to manage the money statewide. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Holvey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I wasn't going to speak to this bill, and I apologize to my colleagues who are ready to vote. But I've really been conflicted with this bill. A lot of people support it. A lot of people don't. I don't feel this is a step towards statewide bargaining. A lot of people, a lot of organizations and unions have statewide regional pools for health care and or insurance and still bargain locally. That's been in existence for quite some time. You know, I would have been a lot more comfortable with this bill had there been an opt-out provision that was more expansive, but I also recognize that with rising health care costs that we really need to do something, and I'm going to be voting for the bill. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Roblin, do you wish to close?
I do, but I will keep it short, Mr. Speaker. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you.
In closing, you know, we've had a great and vigorous debate here. It's what the legislature should be about. It's how we come together to make law. And I will commend all of the people for the conversation that we've had today on the floor and implore people when the vote is taken that we all work together to make sure this works. For 32 years, I had the distinct opportunity and privilege to work with families and students in Oregon. And as a high school teacher and administrator, there is nothing that I care about more than those kids in those schools. And I know that's true with people on both sides of this aisle. We have to make difficult decisions in our lives to help those people that we care about the most. And from my perspective, making decisions which give us the opportunity to keep healthcare costs down so that the money I could have had as an administrator to work with those kids in my school is something that I have to do. I implore you to consider strongly all of the discussion that has happened here today and vote for Senate Bill 426B. Thank you very much. And I respectfully ask for a call of the House.
Representative Roblin requests a call of the House. He is joined by Representative Garrard, Representative Dallum, Representative McPherson, Representative Gilman, and Representative Barnhart. The doorkeepers will bar the doors. Sergeant Arms will attend, and the clerk will call the roll.
Barker. Barnhart. Berger. Berger-Beyer. Beyer-Bonamici. Boone. Boquist. Bruin. Buckley. Burley. Butler. Cameron. Cannon. Clem. Cowan. Dallum, Dingfelder, Chris Edwards, David Edwards, Esquivel, Flores, Galizio, Garrard, Gilzer, Gilliam, Gilman, Gerard, Greenlick, Hannah, Holvey, Hunt, Jensen, Jensen Comp, Kotek, Krieger, Crummel, Lim McPherson, Maurer, Minnis, Morgan, Nathanson, Nelson, Nolan, Olson, Reed, Richardson, Riley, Roblin, Rosenbaum, Schaffler, Scott, Shields, Greg Smith, Patty Smith, Thatcher, Tomei, Wisnet, Witt, Mr. Speaker, not answering, Berger, Beyer, Jensen, Lim, excused, Boquist, Butler, Esquivel, Minnis,
All members are present. Representative Nelson, for what purpose do you rise?
Mr. Speaker, to declare a potential conflict of interest.
Please go ahead and state your conflict.
I'm proud to be an Oregon teacher.
Thank you. Your potential conflict of interest is noted for the record. Since all are present, those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Greg Smith, how do you vote? Representative Smith votes aye. House Bill, Senate Bill 426B, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. We now return to third reading of House bills. Chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and that the bills remaining on today's third reading of House bills be carried over to their proper place on Wednesday, March 14, 2007, third reading calendar. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and that the resolution reading in today's final reading, memorials and resolutions, be carried over to its proper place on Wednesday, March 14, 2007 calendar. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Bills, reports, and other business lying on the table. First reading of Senate bills.
Senate Bill 199, relating to student assistance, declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 202, relating to farm labor contractor duties. Senate Bill 205, relating to examination for licensure by Board of Naturopathic Examiners. Senate Bill 207, relating to authority Board of Naturopathic Examiners. Senate Bill 214, relating to public charter schools, declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 216, relating to education and youth care centers, declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 233, relating to processes and claims by State Accident Insurance Fund Corporation for certain injuries sustained by inmates of institutions of Department of Corrections. Senate Bill 244, relating to DNA testing. Senate Bill 255, relating to reimbursement of personal injury protection benefits. Senate Bill 271, relating to courts. Senate Bill 310 related to sale of county land. Senate Bill 311 related to application for action by local government. Senate Bill 325 related to personal appearance and juvenile proceedings.
Bills read first time are passed the Speaker's desk for referral. Second reading of Senate bills. Third reading of Senate bills. Chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and that the bills remain on today's third reading of Senate bills be carried over to their proper place on Wednesday, March 14, 2007. Third reading calendar. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Other business of the House. Other business of the Senate. Orders of the day have been completed. Announcements. Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The House Revenue Committee will meet promptly at 1:30 after the Democratic Caucus.
Representative Barker.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Veterans meet at 1:30.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Remind the Republican members that we will caucus, so grab your lunch and come to the caucus room.
Representative Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The House Committee on Government Accountability, Information Technology will meet at 1:30.
Representative Hunt.
House Democrats will also caucus right now, and Mr. Speaker, I would request unanimous consent that on Senate Bill 426, Representative Nelson be allowed to change her vote. It will not affect the outcome.
Representative Hunt requests unanimous consent that on Senate Bill 426, Representative Nelson be allowed to change her vote. Is there objection? Seeing none, Representative Nelson, how do you vote?
Mr. Speaker, nay.
Representative Nelson votes nay. Representative Kotek.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I invite you to join me tomorrow in the gallery at noon. Tomorrow is Healthy Kids Learn Better Day, and we are recognizing President Peter Courtney for his work on physical education. But more importantly, there will be a hula hoop contest at noon tomorrow. It is a competition. If you are a legislator who knows how to hoop it up, I urge you to join me because I'm going to need help. So tomorrow at noon, hula hoop contest with Healthy Kids Learn Better. Thank you.
Representative Comp.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Education Subcommittee meets at 1:30.
Are there further announcements? Colleagues, I would give you notice that there is a potential House session on Friday afternoon. Further announcements? Remonstrances? Representative Maurer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Josephine County, in an effort to prepare for the massive loss of revenue as a result of the cut in ONC funds, is going to go from 700 employees just 2 years ago to or near 200 beginning July 1st. As a result of that, the library system, fairgrounds will close, public health services will be cut in half, public roadways will no longer be maintained, the sheriff, district attorney, and juvenile justice will be compromised, and unfortunately, taxes will go uncollected. And finally, emergency management and search and rescue will cease to be a significant effort in Josephine County. And in light of the events in the last year, I find that unacceptable. Thank you.
Further remonstrances? Adjournment. Representative Jensen. Representative Richardson, could you serve as substitute dean of the House? Adjournment motion for 10:30 a.m. Wednesday, March 14, 2007.
Mr. Speaker, I move the adjournment till March 14, 2007 at
10:30
a.m.
Representative Richardson moves the House adjourn until 10:30 a.m. Wednesday, March 14, 2007. Without objection, the House is adjourned.